Welcome to All the Bits, a fake radio show about board games, the community, and all the lovely, lovely bits. All the Bits is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network and is sponsored by Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find an amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Sean and Michelle.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 78.
In this episode's bits, we'll talk about Overboss, Mandala Stones, Disney's Haunted Mansion, The Initiative. We'll discuss our top five small itty-bitty wincy card games, and we'll do our shipping out bit and get up to all of our usual antics of asking pointless questions, guessing games, and drooling over bits.
Bits, 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 bits. There you go.
Speaking of drooling, you know what I don't have, Michelle?
I got nothing.
Beer.
Oh, I have coffee this time.
Coffee? Mm. So late at night. Oh, my gosh.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm not allowed having coffee past, like, 4 o'clock.
I usually go a little earlier than this, but I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah,
right?
Sure. Be great. Yeah. It's probably because after we record, you probably have games to play.
I might do that.
And I'm just going to go to bed and pass out.
There you go. See, you just need to start drinking more coffee, Sean.
Oh, I do not need to do that.
However, you get up much earlier than I do.
Yes. And I've also already had like 4 coffees today.
Mm.
Almost like a whole liter of cold brew. It's pretty brutal.
I used to have, as soon as a coffee was done, I would refill my coffee. So, but I'm down to like 3 to 4 cups a day.
Oh, that's not terrible.
It's very good for me, but I recognize that probably, I don't know, what did they think? 2 to 3? Is that the recommended?
I have no idea. Is there
coffee amount?
I have a fun fact. Fun fact about Sean. I cannot drink coffee in the morning.
Huh?
Or else, you know, it's the equivalent of someone taking a game that doesn't have a good insert and shaking it really violently, and all the innards go all over the place. That's what happens, in case anyone was wondering, if I drink coffee first thing in the morning.
What's it's that? So lovely first thing in the morning. It's like the best part of waking up.
Folgers in your cup.
Do you know what else is the best part of waking up?
What?
Putting on one of my many Meeples Crossing shirts.
Oh, or that's a good one.
Thank you.
Good segue. Or just sleeping in it.
That's true. They are so comfy.
Because they're super comfortable, and then you just sleep in it all night.
Roll out of bed and keep on keeping on. That's how I like it.
Why are we so excited about MeeplesCrossing.com t-shirts, Michelle?
Got to get that .com in there. Because we have some merch.
Merch!
All you bitchers kept contacting us relentlessly.
Relentlessly.
Yeah, asking us for merch. Get it together, people. So we did. Like many years later. And here we are with a beautiful shirt that you can pre-order until June 4th on MeeplesCrossing.com.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Another week and a half to pre-order those t-shirts.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
And they're
comfortable.
A bunch of bitsers already who've pre-ordered and they're super excited. So,
all awesome. Those relentless messages have ceased.
Yes, because everyone's getting their t-shirts from www.meeplescrossing.com.
There you go. And there's also some other really great designs and stickers and coasters and pins, perhaps, I think.
Does remind me I should get new stickers for my computer.
Aha, there you go.
A new computer. Mm-hmm.
There you go. I got nothing for a segue.
Yeah, me either.
I was like,
I'm trying to think of it, and then I just landed up.
There, I segued my sigh into.
I could get rid of the dead air. It's fine, but I probably won't. So it'll just be dead air as we wait for the other person to segue with our Ask Me Anything bit.
Wherein we ask each other useless questions about this beautiful hobby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you.
I hope you do.
That I've been, yeah, no, well, no, I don't always, because sometimes I do that random generator thing or just give you an anagram. But I do have a question I was wondering about.
Okay.
So I was recently tearing apart my basement again, because that's all I do in 2021 is just reorganize everything over and over. Because what else?
Which is awesome fun, by the way, as someone who loves to organize.
And I was wondering, Michelle, now I know this is a bit of a loaded question for someone like you who enjoys, how do we say, some of the blander games in the hobby.
That's a nice way of saying it.
Yeah. Who enjoys the beige.
The beige.
But if you were, and you can give me one, you can give me up to three, because I know it's kind of putting you on the spot here. But if you were to find, if you were to think of your three, try and put it in a nice way, least appealing games to someone else. Games you might just completely adore, right? You love games, but just the box cover is so unappealing. And you know, when I think about this, I think of like Kalis and the guy crossing his arms. That really And so I am sure there are a lot of Euros, but how would you quote unquote jazz up the box covers of those games? And it could be one, two, or three.
Well,
to try and hook people.
I mean, okay, so do you want me to list specific names or just talk games about like just generally how I would change them?
What you would do. Yeah. So let's say pick a game and how would you change that cover to make it more appealing to people?
I think like get rid of the really poorly, what I would say is poorly illustrated white dude on the box, and or white girl, like woman, because there are, like, I'm thinking of Concordia specifically, because that might be one of the worst covers out there. And then they tried to fix it and it was like 2% better. Like, I don't understand how you go back to the table and come back with like something so similar. Oy. So I would say get rid of that. And I find a lot of the illustrations, I'm not familiar with art styles, so it's difficult for me to say, but it's like that, those kind of like soft, blander colors and almost like an older school look to them. Like, I find a lot of the newer games that are exciting from an art perspective have more, like, they're just more modern in terms of, they look more digitally created is maybe what it is. There's, you know, the colors are so much more vibrant. So I would just say like, yeah, just modernize, you know?
I was thinking, I kind of thought about this question when I was looking at the, you know, Paladins and Architects of the West Kingdom, like those ones. Because those are like very Euro-y themed names and types of games. But they took those boxes and they're kind of cartoonified a little bit. You know, they use lots of reds, or with the Viking ones, lots of blues in it to make them, you know, pop a little bit more, make them a little more appealing. That's why I was thinking of this question.
Kalis Trajan is another one that just like I actually I can't think of what the Renegade, I know Renegades changed it up a little bit, but I think it still looks pretty close to what it was before, and just it doesn't look like it was made today, you know. They just look like they look old, and I don't know why you would go with that art style. I don't know if it's like, oh, it's a Euro, so there's like, it gives that Euro feel. Yeah. Although I think in recent years especially, we've really started to move away from that. And, you know, art is definitely selling.
Yep.
Like, if a game is gorgeous, yes, the bits are important, the plastic, all of that stuff. But if a game has great art and it's beautiful, you're going to just draw more people in. So I feel like for the most part, aside from Aaliyah, publishers are moving more towards that. Oh man, I was playing Castles of Tuscany. It was like the same thing. Like, just, I don't understand. Bland, 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 you know?
All right. But, that was my question.
All right. I don't know if I answered it, but.
Yeah, that's close enough. That's fine.
All right. My question for you is usually what we would do for a hot topic, but I'm not doing it for a hot topic. So here we are.
Okay.
All right. So the Spiel des Jahres nominees were announced this past week. So the nominees for this year are The Adventures of Robin Hood, which is not out in North America yet that I've seen.
No.
But you kind of know what it'll be like a little bit.
Yep.
Micro Macro Crime City, which I've talked about.
About the last episode, yep.
Did you play that? Have you
still haven't played it yet, no.
Okay, but you know it.
Yeah, I have.
Okay. And lastly, Zombie Teens Evolution. So those are your three nominees. So my question for you, Sean, is which one do you think will win? And why?
I have no... Robin Hood, because we don't have access to it. Let's say Robin.
That's a very solid, well thought out reason, Sean.
Is it the one with the hidden, like, you know, you can, it's that Robin Hood, right? From the same designer of Legends of Andor.
Yeah.
I think, yeah. So it's got, yeah. I mean, I was, that was like, I can't remember, like my third or fourth most anticipated game of the year. So yeah, let's say that. Let's say Robin Hood. Everyone loves a good Robin Hood tale. Sure.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. My guess, for what it's worth, is not Robin Hood. Because I think it's more complex for the
studio. Yeah, that's, compared to the other ones, yeah.
I think it might go to Micro Macro because
it's a fresh,
innovative take that I think anybody could get into.
Much like the All the Bits podcast.
For sure. All right, cool. There you go. What do you think of those, by the way? I guess you haven't played them, so you don't really have much of an opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I've played Zombie Kids, multiple boxes of it, but not Zombie Teens yet, which I'm assuming, I mean, I love of those three that I'm sure that one will probably be my favorite. I am looking forward to playing Micro Macro, though. Yeah, I don't know.
And you pre-ordered Robin Hood, right?
No, are you? I never pre-ordered anything. No,
I thought you had said you did. No, or maybe you just talked about it next up. I made assumptions based on my own gaming habits.
Yes. No. I like very rarely pre-order stuff, but although maybe I should with that one because I am very excited about that one. It looks like it has some neat things going for it. So
I think it's hitting our shelves soon. So that's exciting. I'm looking forward to giving it a go.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't remember the sound. Really?
Sure.
Okay.
This is our Guess the Game bit.
Wherein we give each other vague, then specific, then super obvious clues from the Board Game Geek to guess the game and ask that you play along with us at home.
That's right.
Or in your
car.
That's
what we do.
Or on your porch since the weather's starting to get nice. So, yeah. Depending where you live.
All right. I'm going to give you some clues.
Okay.
You ready?
Give each other the same game like a couple episodes.
I feel like this one might be pretty easy. And we may have done it in the past.
Okay.
All right, this is a 2017 release.
Fantasy Realms.
No. Okay. But that very, very likely could have ended up on the list. This has a current rating of 7.8 with 56,000 ratings.
Whoa.
Mm.
Okay. 2017.
Yeah. It plays 2-4 in 30 to 45 minutes and has a weight of 1.76.
Ooh.
Yeah. Really? I didn't realize Chris Quilliams was, and Philip Guerin, but I don't know him, but I know I recognize Chris Quilliam's name as the artist. He did Coimbra and I think, what else? I was going to say Merv, but that's Ian O'Toole. What was the other one that was like Coimbra?
He's done the library one. Alma Mater.
Oh, yes. Alma Mater. Look at you with your Euro knowledge.
So smart.
Apparently, he also worked on Pandemic, which I did not know. But yeah, I didn't know he did Azul. I really like his art, so. I bet you that's why I like the card backs in Pandemic so much, because it's got Chris Quilliam's on it.
You subconsciously knew it.
Boom. Did you know he is from Winnipeg, Canada?
No, is he?
Yeah, he is. Really? Yes. Oh. And he now lives in Quebec.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I wonder if I've met him.
Well, Canada is pretty small.
It is, and Quebec's so... even smaller. All right.
Well, we go. Let me fail miserably.
My initial one, Michelle, was Fantasy Realm, so I'm going to change that now. That's why I guessed right away.
Darn.
But Fantasy Realms, which was it one of them.
Yeah, it was nominated as the one of the Kennersfields, which actually really surprises me. But
yeah. Well, I guess it's probably because it was out in Germany. It probably wasn't out in Germany before.
Yeah, I meant more from a weight perspective. Mm-hmm. It's very light.
It is.
Yeah.
All righty. Here we go. You're ready? This game came out in 2004.
Sorry, when?
2004.
Okay.
And is ranked has a rating of 7.1 with 38,000 ratings and 8,000 comments on BoardGameGeek. It plays three to six players in about 60 minutes and has a weight. Oh, this is being very generous with the weight of 2.38.
It's not Power Grid, is it?
It is not. No.
2000. You said 2004, hey?
2004. Yes. It has had a number. I can give you the design. I don't think the designers is going to help. I'll go back to that. It might actually after. It's had a number of different publishers though. I do know that. All right. You want more?
Yes, please.
Adventure, exploration.
Is it Robinson Crusoe? No, that was a bad guess. Keep going.
And miniatures. But I guess it does have.
What was the third thing you said? You cut out. You're cutting out for some reason.
Horror.
Oh, so is it like Arkham Horror? No, 60 minutes, not 3 to 6. Man, my guesses are like I'm not thinking before I'm talking right now. Okay.
All right, I'll give you some mechanisms here. There's a lot of mechanisms in this. All right, dice rolling, map addition, modular board. Player elimination.
Is it? No. It's not King of Tokyo.
No. I'm going to see if that's a thing on here. And Trader Game, as they tell it here.
Shadows Over Camelot?
No. You're on the right path.
Traders. Oh, what was that? No, that game. Battlestar Galactica, I've heard, is way longer than 60 minutes.
Oh, yes.
A traitor mechanic. 3 to 6. Is it Resistance?
No.
Coup?
No.
No, I think those are lighter. Map Edition.
Yes, that's a big part of it.
And so, dice rolling, you said. There's no combat, though.
Ish. Yeah. Ish. Storytelling and role-playing are big parts of it.
Is this, I don't think so, but
very,
is
very
it?
Popular game.
Oh, why can't I think of that game? The one where you go and you have a sex change in the pool. What's that one called?
Tales of Arabia
the
Nights.
Book?
No.
That's it.
No. Also a lot longer than 60 minutes.
Yeah, I thought so, but yeah. I'm like, geez, I'm not. It's old too, right?
Oldish, but very, very popular.
It's it's not. I'm like, okay, think about all the games you can buy at Walmart. Seven Wonders, Pandemic.
Yeah, but I think you can buy it. It is
very popular.
Yeah.
I got nothing. Trader Mechanic too, hey? Oh, is it? No, it's not Dead of Winter.
No.
That was later, because I was in the lobby by that point.
Yeah.
What else has a Trader Mechanic in from 2004?
2000. It's probably one of the
originals.
Original-ish, yeah.
Dungeon
Crawly.
I can't think of it, Sean. Do you have anything else?
No.
Okay, just tell me.
House on the Hill.
Oh, that's 60 minutes too, hey?
That is usually probably a few times
I've played.
Definitely longer than 60 minutes.
Have you played this?
Yeah, I've played it a few times.
Yeah, me too. Did you like it?
Not terribly, but no. I feel like this is one of those games too that has a lot to do with who you play with and the type of, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
2004.
Yeah, it was an Apple Hill game initially.
Darn, I really wish I would have gotten that one. Yeah, I couldn't think of any because there weren't many trader games back then. I don't think. Darn.
Damn.
All right, good one. That was a. Yeah. All right, what are we doing now? Are we pew 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 pew
pew pew pew pew pew pew pew pew.
That's our pew pew. Hence the pew pews.
Pew pews.
Yes.
This is our bit wherein we explain games poorly and then tell you what we think of them after a play or more using our superficial scale of Michelle.
1, that would be a hard no. 2, meh. 3, I mean, it's fine. 4, tis a gooder. And 5, it's got the spark.
Spark. The spark.
The spark. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. You think I would get better at spark now?
No.
Spark noises, but I feel like it's just getting worse.
Yeah. Well, you can pew-pew me first.
Okay, I'm going to pew-pew you with some mandala stones.
Mm.
So, this is a game that came out in 2021. It has a current rating of 7.6 with 128 ratings. It plays 2 to 4 players in 30 minutes and has a weight of 1.83. This was designed by Philippe Gloax. I don't know how to say his last name. Sorry, Philippe. Art by, oh boy, Zbigniew Mgelter, and published by Board and Dice. This is an abstract game, and it is has wonderful acrylic pieces like Azul of all colors. And what you're doing is you are trying to get the most points. And there you go. That's it in a nutshell. No. Okay. So there is a grid, if you will. No, actually, there is. So in the central board, there are stacks of these round chips in 4 different colors, I believe. Yellow, pink, purple, blue. And there's a spot in the middle of the stacks. So there's 1, 2, 3. There's 9 spots where you can put these little black pawns. I know they have a name and I can't think of it. And when you put a black pawn down, you are basically surrounded by 4 stacks of these mandala stones. And if you're at the top of these black pawns, there's different patterns. And so when you put down a black pawn, and that's really all you do on your turn is you move a pawn. And, am I still there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
Oh, I hear you.
Using a new computer, so it just did a, sounded like something disconnected.
Yeah.
So when you move the pawn, you check or the four stacks. And if something matches, if a mandala stone matches the pattern that's on top of your pawn, then you get to take that stone. And you get to take all the stones that match your pawn, except you cannot take a stone if it is adjacent to another pawn. So because there's this, you know, grid of 3x3, there are obviously times where you put down a black pawn and there's another one adjacent to it. So you can't take the stone between those two. And you have to take them in clockwise or counterclockwise order, and you choose. And then you take that, so you basically end up with a stack, hopefully, or maybe just one stone. But you end up with a stack, and you put that on your player board. And there are 5 different spots that you can put a stack on. And once a spot has a stack, you can no longer add additional stones to that stack. The other thing you can do is score, and that's why the stacks matter. So each, like I said, there's 5, you can build 5 different stacks on your player board, and each of those stacks score slightly different. So for example, one might say, when you score X number of points for having different heights of towers on your board or stacks on your board. One might have, the less stones you have in a stack, they're worth more. Another one might be the more stacks you have. So, for example, maybe if you have a stack of 4, that fourth one is worth 6 points. And maybe in another stack, the bottom only having 1 is worth 4 points. But if you have 4 in that stack, you only get 0 points. So, like, I'm not sure if I'm making sense. But anyway, so they all score slightly differently. They want you to do different things. When you choose to score, you're only allowed to score a color. So you can say, I'm going to score blue. And what that means is that you look at your 5 stacks and you can only score the stacks that have blue on the top. So, and then you take off the top, so the blue stone, for example, off those stacks. And now there's another color or other colors that are revealed, right? Because they're stacks. So there's a bit of a trick to trying to build your stacks in such a way that they can score together. There's some synergy between your stacks in terms of colors. The other interesting thing is that when you score, you take those stones off the stacks and you actually put them on a board, which is just like, it's kind of like the Quacks of Quedlinburg track where it just goes around in a circle from the center. And so you lay down all your stones and then some of the spots that you put them on might give you bonus points. And that's actually the timer for the game as well. So once you get to past the 2-player, 3-player, 4-player spot, that triggers the end of the game. So if you're scoring a lot, you know, the game might go by quicker. So there's a timing element there. And that's pretty much it, I think. Yep. So it's actually a really straightforward game. The way the rule book is worded, and I did do an online demo of this with a publisher, I think actually with Philippe, the designer, and it's like kind of weird when you explain it, but then once you see it, you're like, oh, okay, that makes perfect sense. But yeah, a really simple, straightforward game that is quick to learn. I always talk about the bits first. Oh, they are so wonderful. I was so excited to get this game, like, It looked beautiful on the computer. I knew it was going to be beautiful in person. There's nothing special about the board. They're kind of dull and gray and thin. But I actually like that because it really makes these mandala stones pop. These mandala stones are in really bright, gorgeous colors. Pink, yellow, like I said, purple, blue. And they've got mandala patterns on them. So they're just really, really pretty. Cool. And they're acrylic. So you get that clunk or that clinky sound. The rule book is good. Like I said, it's a little bit, takes a minute to kind of, okay, so how does that work when you put down a pawn? But once you get it, it's very straightforward. So just a really nice production overall. I loved this game when I played the demo. We did get a review copy. I was so excited to play this in person, and I just wasn't disappointed. I really, really, really like this game. The reason I think I like it is that I do like abstracts, but I do really like abstracts, but I'm not a fan of how they can suffer from a lot of AP, and I also get lazy. Like, I don't want to have to plan, you know, 5 moves in advance, for example. And what I appreciate about this game is that it feels like there's just enough, like, how many colors there are and how many designs there are in terms of the mandala designs. I feel like it was very intentional, because there's enough choice to make it interesting, but there's not too many choices that it bogs down in possibilities. So it's pretty, like, there's depth in terms of, okay, you know, what stones do I want to get? In what order do I want to get them? How do I want to score this? You know, like, there's depth there, but there's the amount of choices that you have, in a sense, aren't, like, so limitless that you're like, okay, well, like, what if I do this? What if I do that? Like, because it's a 9, that's not 3x3 grid, and there's 4 black pawns out there. It's pretty, like, there's not a ton of possibility in terms of where you can go. And I feel like it was intentional just to make it just enough, and, or maybe it's just right for me, but I just find it strikes a really, really nice balance. I really like this game. I think the scoring track is really fun, because you might want to score, but you might say, oh, if I score these 3 stacks, that means that I leave open the +2 points. So my opponent's going to get that next. So do I want to, like, try to wait and score? So, you know, there's a little bit there, and how you can control the timing of the game. It's great. It's just like perfect in my opinion. I know that, yeah, it strikes the right balance. It's just really great. I really like it. And I played it with Rich, who hates abstracts, because he, like, I can get to a point where I'm like, oh, I'll just do this and see where it leads me and whatever. And he is like, he can't do that. He can't just, like, let it go. He has to look through all the possibilities and make the right decision. And so he finds that abstracts are just too much work. He just doesn't care to do them. And we both felt like mandala stones was that really nice, in the middle. So I think if you like Azul and you like abstracts in general, you will like this. But I think if you're like really love just the grinding, hardcore abstract type of game, you might find this too light, although it might be a nice kind of filler for you. So there you go. It's a 5, obviously. It's got the spark.
Ooh.
Yeah. Really just great game. Really happy with this one.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let me get to my first pew 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 here. Let's see, do I want to do that or that? All right. My first pew pew is Overboss, a boss monster adventure from Brotherwise Games and designed by Aaron Mesburn and Kevin Russ, with art by Darren Calvert. And this is another game that was sent over to us as a review copy. So just to let you guys know, but this is a not follow-up, and I keep calling it Boss Monster. Not a follow-up to Boss Monster. They're set in the same universe as Boss Monster. For those of you who don't know, Boss Monster, I feel like Boss Monster was one of the first handful of games I played when I got into the hobby. And
oh, I was so excited for it.
I know, and then I kind of played it. It's just you're building a dungeon. You're in Boss Monster. You're a like a Bowser is his name, right? And you're like building it, or the guy from Legend of Zelda, and you're building a dungeon to try and trap your hero is basically what you're doing. And in this one takes on a similar way in that you're building an overworld. So, you know, the kind of top part of a game that has all the locations and stuff, so like Zelda type thing, you're building an overworld and you're populating it with various monsters and mini bosses, minions and mini bosses, and you're trying to kind of trap the heroes, but you're all going against each other. So you're different characters from boss monster and you're all basically kind of going against each other. But it is a tile laying map building game. So what you do in the game is you have a player board. Player board is either 3x4 if you want the quote short game, and it plays in like 20 to 30 minutes. So it's a very quick game. 1 to 5 plays 1 to 5 with a weight of 2.07, which I forgot to mention. But so it's a super quick game, but you can flip it over and then it's a 4x4 grid that you can play. There you go, Michelle. There's a grid to it. And what you are doing in this game is there are eight different terrain tiles. And you're going to choose 5 different types of terrain. And you are going to shuffle them all together. And then you're going to have little chits, which represent the mini bosses, which basically kind of just give you points. They represent minions, which I'll get to in a second. They represent crystals, which basically give you more points based on the different terrain tiles you have, and portals, which I'll get to in a second as well. And what you are doing is you are setting up your market is going to have one terrain tile, and there's going to be 4 of those. And you're going to draft them. And each time you draft one, you pull a chit out from the bag and you flip over a new tile. And you keep going that until everyone has populated their boards. So either the 12 or the 16. And then you score. And that's the end of the game. As you're populating your board, the different terrain tiles all work in a different way to give you points. So let's say there's like the forest and the camps, which are basically set collection. The forest, you're trying to get up to 4 or 5 different forests, and you'll get the most maximum points. Camps, you're trying to get those, but you're also trying to get different unique camps. They have different flags on them, so those will give you points. There's things like swamps, which you want to build them at the edge of everyone's board. There's locations for like water and mountains. So if you play a swamp, you want to try and get it near water, because you'll get bonus points each time you're near water or near another swamp. Caves work similarly in that you want to put them near like a mountain and you'll get more points for them. So what you're going to do is you're going to choose 5 different terrain tiles for your game. So there's some variability there. And you're also going to choose dungeon tiles, which basically what dungeon tiles want to do is you want to have different terrains adjacent to them, either up and down or left, right, not diagonally, and they'll give you more points for doing that. So additionally, you have the little chits I mentioned, and you have to place a chit on the tile that you draft, unless if it's a dungeon. If it's a dungeon, then you can't place it, because dungeons you don't put the chits on. And what you are trying to do at the end of the game is the way scoring works is you score based on the types of terrain tiles you have, but you also score points for each monster or minion that is on its associated terrain tile. So they'll all have little symbols. So like there might be monsters for the forest one. And so for each one that's on each monster with the forest symbol that's on the forest terrain, you'll get points. You'll get a point for that as well. But you'll also get points if you have them if you have the same types of monsters in lines, either horizontally or vertical. So you get points for that. You get points for these crystals that I mentioned earlier, which are little chits, and they basically, like, for each forest you have, you'll get a point. So it's a way to score points. Mini bosses are just, like, straight-out points, I believe. And then there's these portal things. So the portals are they're one-time use things that you can do on your turn. Little chits you kind of keep next to your board. You flip them over, and then you can move around some of your monsters or mini bosses. So it's really, that I'm aware of, I think, the only way in the game to actually move things around. Once they're placed, they're placed. So that's the game. Then you score the game. There are all the different ways to score. You score the game. There are two different variants of the game. So you can play the base game, which is pretty much what I described. Then you can play the game, which is on quote-unquote advanced mode, which you assume the role of one of the monsters. And what's neat about it is when you assume the role of one of the monsters, you choose at the beginning. I think everyone dealt two monsters at the beginning of the game. You choose one, put it face down, and at any time during the game, you can reveal it to use its power. So each monster has some sort of power, special power, as well as a special scoring condition. But you don't know what it is until the person actually reveals it. So you can kind of wait as long as you want and come up with a strategy to use it and to do it. And then there are these cards. There are these other cards that you can work into the game as well, which kind of give you other powers. But I think the monsters is where it's at, because that gives it a little bit of player variability. I really like that. I'd like, definitely advanced mode is kind of the way to go with this game. It's nice on both games. It doesn't overstay its welcome. You know, 20 to 30 minutes is really good. Is a really good length for a game like this. Bits, which I know you like talking about, Michelle. The artwork is fantastic on this game. It's really good if you have any just care mm-hmm. about 8 and 16 bit graphic video games. It's got that look to it, which is really nice. Kind of looks like a Legend, or I've been downloading, you know, all these games on my Switch, which try and emulate that, like, kind of 8 to 16 bit. Looks very much like that, which is really neat. It's got a beautiful Gamer Trays insert with it, which kind of puts the little pieces in, and then you put the top pieces on top, the bigger pieces on top of them, which is really nice, which is awesome. Go ahead.
I'm curious, because I'm like looking at pictures of the game, and there's so many bits, like yes. with all these tile types and stuff. And for like a 20 to 30 minute game, it seems like a lot of work.
That's what I'm going to get to.
Okay. I was wondering if the insert like made that okay. Cause I was like,
So that is the issue with this game that I have. And it still is a really good game. It is awesome. Is a really good game, but man, there are a lot of pieces for a game that's 20 to 30 minutes. And I don't know the answer to this at all. I can't give you the answer, and I understand why they did the Gamer Trays to try and help with setup. But the problem is, yes, it helps with setup, but then teardown is like you have to organize everything
right.
and then put it back in. And honestly, between setup and teardown, probably takes just as long as the game.
Yeah.
So like, it's the type of game, and I definitely think it's a game that's totally 100% good enough to play two or three times in a row, but that's the only way I would play this game.
Yeah.
Like, play one time it's a lot of work, man. For a game that, you know, I think back to, I can't remember the name of it. You probably know. It's just a very small box. I think it's a Renegade game. Maybe it's no, it's not that one. It's one of those, you know, it's like a tile building game, but
it's just Honshu? Like
a small deck of cards. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, right? Like, you can do things like that and not need all these bits.
Yeah.
That being said, it is a very enjoyable game. It's, you know, it works well. Like, again, I was able to play this with Nora. You know, once she learned how to do what the different tiles meant, she was mm-hmm. able to play it. My wife thought I was nuts for trying to recommend this game for the amount of time it took to put it away and set it up. But she enjoyed it as well. You know, so it's a very good game. That teardown, though, is I think that not so much the setup, it's that teardown is going to scare a lot of people off from playing this. I have not played it single player, but I look for solo. They've created this whole thing where you do levels and you have like branching quests, and there's like a bit of a campaign there. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to trying. And you have specific objectives that you have to get. I have a feeling, you know, sitting down for like an hour or an hour and a half to do that might be a really fun experience. And a lot of people said they their preferred way as one player. I debated whether I'm going to give this a 3 or 4, whether it's, I mean, it's fine or whether it's a gooder. And I think the gameplay is strong enough to warrant a 4. Tis a gooder. I think it's on the low side. And I think if not for that setup, and again, I don't know enough to have an answer or the setup of Teardale to give you what the answer would be. But if not for that, it would definitely probably be a high 4, because it really does scratch that itch. But that it still is a good.
Is there anything about
it's a good
it?
Game.
Is there any like it looks great. It seems to me like a game we've seen before.
Oh yeah.
In totally. A way, like, is there anything like what's unique about it?
I mean, I don't think it's unique per se. But it's I think the advanced mode with the variable player powers, mm-hmm. I think it's really nice. I think especially that is hidden. I mean, again, I can imagine if you've played it, you know, 20 times,
right.
you know, but there are 6 or 8 characters. And I think in the Kickstarter version, there are even more. There are some other ones. So there's a lot of different characters. So you really have to kind of know the game well, I think, to kind of predict what other people are doing, and you mm-hmm. have to know all the characters. I think that's the neatest part, is okay, playing cool. with those variable player powers, because I haven't played very many tile lane games that I don't think I've played any that have that variable nature to it, and the fact that you have A, the special power, and B, a specific scoring is it's a nice thing. I think that's what kind of sets it apart. If you're looking just at the base game, then I don't. I think it's a basic tile laying game, but I think those monsters really add a nice layer onto it.
Cool.
Yep.
Yeah, the art gets me. Oh.
Yeah.
It's tempting for me I mean, just to play in that universe is lovely. It looks great. The art and the tiles. And
the I don't even know what it's for, but the Kickstarter had this wooden die cut castle with it.
Oh, I saw that in the images. That's
yeah,
what that is.
And I think the way that I grasp it actually stores the gamer trick. So the retail version, which is the one I have, doesn't have some of the extra characters. I think there are some placemats as well and some other stuff, but the game trays thing has a thing on top where it looks like it's specifically fit for the castle. I don't know what the purpose of that castle is.
Like it's holding tiles.
It might be. That's where you put the tiles.
Yeah.
Which would make sense. The tiles are just a giant stack of 100 tiles or 80 tiles that you have to be using. Okay. So that makes sense. It probably helps. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Neat. All right. And you gave it a what? A 3?
That's a 4.
A 4. Okay.
That's a 4. Not a little bit on the lower end, but a 4.
A low 4. All right. Well, my next pew-pew is The Initiative. This came out in 2021 as well. Has a current rating of 7.9 with 156 ratings. Plays 1 to 4 in 30 to 60 minutes and has a weight of 1.89. It's designed by Corey Knizia, art by David Ardilla, Chan Chow, Andrew Brian George, and published by Unexpected Games. Oh, I didn't realize that. That's a new publisher to me. This is let's see how they describe it on BGG, a cooperative deduction scenario game. So this game is a cooperative game similar to Lost Cities, where you're trying to break codes and that's pretty much it. So there's a comic book that goes with it. So you
that's super cool.
Yeah, you read a comic book page and then you do a mission. And your mission is to crack a code, basically. So there's this stand that you put a card in, and then there's like symbols And as you play the game, you'll get, and I'll explain how that happens, but you'll get files, which are basically chits that you flip over that have these symbols on the back. And so when you get those symbols, you flip up these little black doors, basically, underneath the matching symbols, and then you reveal something, usually letters, sometimes numbers. You know, they're all slightly different. And at any point in time, when you feel like you know what the answer is, could be a word. Sometimes it's like a pattern. It's basically code breaking. Then you can say, okay, we think we have the answer. And then you either win or lose. Regardless, you move on to the next mission. And then also in the storybook, there's a little bit, not a ton, or in the comic, there's a little bit of, like, you'll get, there's a pack of secret cards. So you might get, like, as you're reading, you might get, like, a secret and, you know, that you have to break outside of the game. But yeah, that's kind of the gist. And the way the game actually works is you have a player board, which is a bird's eye view of a map. And there's two different maps. And the each mission will tell you how to set it up. And you have these, like I said, these little file folder chits that you put in different rooms. And then you have a character, Sandy. And then on your turn, you take a few actions. And there's actions that allow you to move. Do intel, which basically allows you to flip over these file folders so you can see what's in the rooms. And gather, which is you picking up those file folders so that you can reveal the codes on the, I don't know what they call it, the key. Mm-hmm. And then there's actually a reset action. And the reason the reset action matters is that in order to take these actions, you have a hand of cards that are made up of different suits. The suits don't really come into play. I'll explain that in a little bit, but they don't really come into play. But there's different suits with different numbers, and they range from, I think it was 1 to 13. And in order for you to take an action, you need to play a card down on the action. There's like a card for each action, but you have to play a card that is higher than the one that was previously played. So the fourth action that I was explaining, the reset, allows you to basically swipe clean one of the actions, because as you can imagine, you get to a point where there's 12s or 13s on top of an action and you can't take that anymore. So you need to reset it. And that's basically the most critical part of the cooperative aspect of the gameplay, is really just it's kind of like that hidden, like the game almost, where you can't tell each other like, oh, I have a 3, so go ahead. You're like, oh, my hand is mostly low, so and I really want to gather intel, so maybe don't go high on intel. Like, you can have those kinds of conversations. But that's how you're taking actions throughout the game. And then, of course, because it's a campaign game, they throw in little twists. So there's, I don't know what I can say. They throw in little twists that make the game more interesting and more difficult, obviously. Yeah. A game takes about 30 to 60 minutes to play. Like, they can be pretty quick. These aren't long involved sessions by any means. So yeah, that's the game in a nutshell. I'll start with bits. This game is gorgeous. If you look at the cover, it's so just pulls you in. Everything is great quality. The stand where you put the cards in is probably the most nerve-wracking game bit I've ever played with. this was a friend's copy, so it wasn't even my own copy. And it's like the thing, like, I was like, is this broken? Am I supposed to slip a card through this? Because it is the tightest. You're supposed to slide this rather large card into this slit. And it is so, so tight. And you're trying not to obviously bend the cards. It did work, but it was very nerve-wracking. And I know Dice Tower complained about it as well. So that would really be my only complaint about the bits. it just, yeah, you have to get over that and just like have some courage. But everything else is really nice. Thick cardboard, cards are nice. The art, I love the art in this. The comic book is great. The characters, the cards, it's all very nice. Well, when it comes to gameplay, so this is it's a pretty light game. What did I say? Let's see, 1.89. Yeah, so it's very light, which is kind of nice because it is blending a bunch of different things. So you've got the code aspect of things, you've got the cooperative moving around the board, you've got your narrative and whatnot. So I didn't feel like any aspect of those actually really stood out. Like they were all fine. The story I feel was fine. I really didn't get that invested in it. I felt like they could have done more with it, but it was fine. And I enjoyed it enough. Again, but you know me, I don't really go to games necessarily for like deep narrative experiences. The cryptic codes were interesting. Again, nothing particularly like, ooh, over the top, really interesting or innovative. Mm-hmm. And I felt like they were fairly straightforward. But fine. And then the gameplay itself, I played it 2. I think at 4 it would get very dull because there's not a whole lot. Like you're just kind of waiting. I mean, I guess if parts of the code get revealed, you know, maybe you're like looking at that and trying to figure it out. But at 2 players, it was nice. It was, you know, bit of back and forth and it worked. So the 3, like if you were to take the kind of the 3 components, the narrative, the code breaking and the gameplay, like moving around the map, none of them are particularly that interesting. But mixed together, I found it was wonderful. I thought it was a really nice blend. And it just worked. Oh. Now, the reason I think it worked a little bit for me is that I've been very tired lately. And, you know, my daughter goes down to bed, we sit down, we're going to play a game, and I'm tired. And so this was just such a nice, it was a perfect weeknight game. It's super quick to set up. It's really easy to learn. And it's easy and quick to play. Like, it's just like, boom, boom, boom. Do we want to do another? Yes, no. Like, just, yeah, easy to crack them out. And if you wanted to make it longer, you could. So I just thought, you know, for me, it really worked in that regard. I could see, like, if I was looking for something more gamey, maybe this wouldn't be that great. But it was just, it might have just been the right time. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Right place, right time kind of game. But yeah, I thought it was really fun. I thought it was interesting. It was just enough to keep me engaged. So this is a campaign game and there is a post campaign, opportunity, I guess. There's like a whole nother set of cards that you can play through that are focused on different types of puzzles. I didn't get into those. I imagine they play very similarly to the campaign, but some people really care about that. You know, how much game is there? I do feel like there's a lot of game, and quite honestly, I imagine you're going to get bored of the game before you play it out. Like, you'll just get to a point where you're like, okay, like, I've seen enough. I'm good. Yeah, so high praises for me on this one. And again, it might have just been right time, right place. But it looked nice. It was some nice ideas that came together well. Nothing mind blowing, or crazy. Mind blowing. But at the same time, it was like, yep, this works. It's nice. It's really nice. So, if you're looking for something a little different to play casually with a little narrative, a little puzzle, this is good. But if you're looking for something like really immersive or deep or innovative, you know, this is probably not what you want to look for. I'm going to give this one a 4. Tis a gooder. Nice. I had fun with this one. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I'm definitely interested in playing this at some point.
I think you'd like it. Yeah. I think you'd really like it.
That box cover is one of the coolest box covers I think I've ever seen.
Isn't it great?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really, really nice production.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Speaking of nice productions, E-ish, my next pew-pew show.
Ish. Wow. Ish.
No, it's nice. No, I didn't mean for that to be, no. I don't think it's quite as nice a production as The Initiative, but that is Disney's Haunted Mansion, Call of the Spirits game. This came out in 2020 from Prospero Hall and published by Funko and... Yeah, design and art by Prospero Hall, so the gaming collective, plays 2 to 6 players in about 30 minutes and has a weight of 1.83. I'm so mean. I'm a horrible person. They didn't mean that at all. No, this game actually does have a pretty nice production. So this is a game that's based on Disney's Haunted Mansion ride.
Okay.
So And so for those of you who don't know, and I'm not into it at all, but there are like people who are obsessed with the Haunted Mansion ride. There are like podcasts and documentaries and all sorts of things just devoted to the Haunted Mansion. Were you aware of that, Michelle?
No, I was not.
No.
I have no clue. A
coworker who's absolutely like, she subscribes to like multiple doesn't subscribe to our podcast, but subscribes to multiple podcasts that are literally just about the Haunted Mansion.
Weird. I love that.
Yeah. So apparently it's got a huge, huge following, and it's a great ride. I've been on it a few times, but I don't have this like obsession with it or this just not obsession, but you know, whatever. Okay. I'm just going to stop talking right now. Anyway,
okay.
This game based on that ride. This is a set collection game. Before I say anything else that just, you know, gets me into trouble. What you are doing in this game is you're going to have a deck of cards that are ghosts or spirits, I guess, as it were. And you are going to go around the endless hallway, which is part of the ride. You're going to go around it, basically collecting the spirits or ghosts or cards. And when the deck is done, the game is over and you tally up points and you score points. And that's it. And these cards, for the most part, are different kinds of sets. So again, like I was talking about an Overboss and pretty much any other set collection game, you are trying to get different kinds of sets. You know, one thing might be a ghost where you need five of the same, or five of the same color, but different logos on them, different symbols. Some might just give you outright points, but they might do all sorts of things when you get them. The other thing about this game that you can do, which is neat for a set collection game, is that you can, one of the actions you could take is you can duel your opponent or duel another person. So if you land in the same room as someone else, because your actions that you use in the game are A, to turn the endless hallway to line up with a room. So it's this little spinny thing in the middle of the board that you place on the middle of the board. You turn it and then you align with the room. Then you can go into the room and you can collect cards. But if you're in the same room as someone else, you can duel that person. And when you duel that person, is what you're going to do is you get to pick one of their cards and duel them for it. And what you then do is everyone takes, you have these dials, and with this is a goblin thingy on it, but they're 0 to 3, and whoever bids the most, so up to 3, gets that card. So let's say if this person has something I need, if I'm red and I land on the same thing as blue and I need this card to give me 5 for the set, I might go and I bid 3 and they bid 2. I get the card, which is great, but I also get 3 haunt cards. And haunt cards suck, because with the haunt cards, what happens is at the end of the game, you tally up the haunt cards, and whoever has the most haunts loses a one type of ghost or one type of spirit. So you might have worked so hard to get that set of 5, but if you have the most haunt cards, you lose them all.
You flip lose the table.
Set. Yeah, it's awful. And so you have those haunt cards, and there is an action you can do. You could go to the seance room, and which that lets you take an action to get rid of a haunt card. There are other ways to get rid of haunt cards as well. Some of the ghosts, spirit cards you might take might have a thing that says, oh, you get to discard one of your haunt cards. There's also ways, I don't know if I mentioned this, but the game goes until there's a timer on the game, which is a deck of event cards. And what you do is you randomly take 12 event cards. Then there's a final round card, which you shuffle into the bottom half of the deck and put the deck on top. That's the timer for the game. So the game's only going to ever be X amount of time. But these event cards tell you how many ghosts cards to put out each turn. So it's usually the number on the cards plus 3, I think, or something like that. But you flip those out. There's also the spirits, which is this mini of 3 different characters from the ride, which again are on the ride. And if any time during your turn you move into their space, you get a haunt card. So you have to kind of think about things like that. But what this is a very basic set collection game with a little added layer on top. It's a really good production value for a game that I think was, I don't know, I remember it was like $20 or $25 at Board Game Bliss. It wasn't an expensive game. I quite enjoyed it. I don't know about the long-term how much play I'll play. Play it. But again, like I mentioned before, we are all my wife not so much, but she's getting there. But we are very big Disney fans in this house, and anything Disney, even things like a ride that I've been on a couple times, anything Disney will get us in for me. So I did quite enjoy it. I'm going to give this game, I think, probably a high 3. Give it a high 3. I'm going to say, it's fine. It's a good game. For what it costs, I think it's totally worth it because it's not too expensive. It's probably what you would pay, very similar to, and I hate bringing cost like value into games, but it is what you would pay for a smaller box game, probably maybe slightly more. But then you get, it's fantastic art. Like, I don't know if I mentioned, the art is really cool. It's really evocative. It's got that look of the ride. It feels like the ride if you're familiar with it. So it's a really neat production. The board is gorgeous. The board is, it's one side of the board, but then on the back is like the manor, the Haunted Mansion Manor on the back of the board, which is really neat. But as for an actual game, I don't think there's a ton in here. I think this game would be best played with Disney fans. I think this is a type of... I would be shocked. I obviously haven't been to Disney in a while, but I would be shocked if this isn't for sale. And like, when you come out of rides at Disney, mm-hmm. they have the stores. I would be shocked if this wasn't for sale there. I'm assuming you can get, it's a Funko game, so you can usually get these games at Target, Walmart. Like, that's the audience that's going, those types of things. So I definitely think, it's fine. And I think it's a fun set collection game that very fillery that you can bust out and play. And if you have any knowledge of the Haunted Mansion, you'd probably really enjoy it. So yeah,
it's cool.
Yeah.
I was totally writing this off. Cause I don't know. Cause it's just like, but then the more I thought about it, I was like, sounds kind of fun.
I love push your luck. Yeah, and it's got that push your luck because, right, you're dealing with the haunt, and those haunts are brutal. Like, they will F you up, man. they will completely tear your game apart.
Well, maybe so I wouldn't like that so much then.
But again, for the amount of time it takes, you're not doing it for 2 hours. You're doing it for 20 minutes. It says a half hour on BGG, but... especially if that card's at the bottom of your deck, it's going to take you 20 minutes to play.
Cool.
All right. Let's
talk about a hot topic. This is our
hot
topic wherein we talk about some... No. We talk about something so hot that even the sun... can't touch this. And our hot topic today is
our top 5 small card games.
Whoop whoop.
AKA I'm sorry, but for those of you who've been listening for any amount of time, this will be the most predictable top five ever.
Oh, no, don't start quizzing me and expecting me to know things that
that's true.
Incapable of. Yeah,
that's true.
All right. No. So
go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, like, when you think small card game, what do you think?
I think small box. I don't carry a purse, but, you know, small-ish enough to comfortably fit in a purse or a backpack or not take up very much space in your quiver or whatever carrying thing you have. A thing that you could just flip out at grandma's house or at, you know, while you're waiting for a meal at the pub, as the kids say, you know, something like that. That's what I view a small box game. Just basically just a small box.
How small about box. You? Yeah, I succeeded at getting, yeah, it had to only have cards, no other bits. Although I probably would have made an exception if something came up.
Two of mine have other bits. Uh-oh.
Okay, well, we'll see. Yeah, but basically, smaller box, easy to bring along somewhere. That was about it.
Cool.
Yeah. What's your number five?
My number five is, and I did not even realize that this was actually published in the U.S. I just had it open, is Cross Carrot, which apparently has been released, I did not realize, as dealt with a exclamation point. I don't think, but now looking at the box, I'm like, oh, yeah, definitely. Okay. Yeah. So, or checkered, what was it? There's also another name that it was called too. But anyway, checkered combos. But
oh, I haven't heard that one.
Yeah. So, and because the card backs are checkered. But this was a game that I played so much when I first discovered it, to the point of I went through a deck of it and then had to chuck it and get a new one, or give it away. I gave it away and then got a new one. That is how much I love this game. And this was a game you're just, you know, you lay down the card and then you're trying to beat the card either with another card or a pair. And if you have a pair, you're trying to beat it with a triple, or you're trying to get runs and you're trying to go get higher and higher. And then you're trying to knock the person out. And I think if you have two chits, and there are little chits in this game, that's what I mentioned. This is one of them.
Cheating.
You are trying to, they're those little, like, I don't know, like old school, like plastic chits, but you're trying to knock the person out twice, I think, to get knocked out. There are stop cards, right. There are block cards, there are wilds. So there's a little bit, I've had so much fun playing this game. I've just, yeah.
Cool. I have this one and I remember liking it, but I just can't remember it. Like I just don't remember enough of it, but
it had probably about 2 years ago. It had a lot of buzz, this game.
Yeah, it did.
2-3 years ago, yeah.
Nice.
How about you? What's your number five?
My number five is Bonanza, classic. Yeah, this is a negotiation trading game, card game, where you are set collecting beans to make money. And you're negotiating with other players to get the cards that you need. And your hand is, you cannot change the order of the cards in your hand. So you can only use the cards in order, basically, as you get them. And that makes it very interesting. And that's why the negotiation is so important, because then that allows you to craft your hand as you need. And this is a game that I play with my mother-in-law every time she comes into town. She visits us a few times a year, and the first night she's here, we play the bean game. And it's a beautiful tradition that I love, and it's a great game. It's an Uwe game.
Yeah. It's funny. I never think of it as an Uwe game.
I know. He's got some really great...
Yeah.
Like, Mamma Mia is another one that was almost on this list we've had a ton... Yeah, a ton of fun with. He's got some good ones. And I've heard Bonanza is like Monopoly. Bonanza in Europe is like Monopoly in North America. Like, it's in every single household.
Yeah. Cool.
Yep.
All right. My Number four is, I think, the smallest of these games size-wise? Question mark. I don't know. But that is Insider. So this is one of those Oink games from Japan. And so if you guys know them, they're those like small rectangle boxes. This is 20 questions. If you're unfamiliar, I think most people are familiar with Insider, but if you're not, it is 20 questions with a timer. So there is another bit in there. It's a different bit. Man, I think there's three of my games that have different bits because it does have a little sand timer, but I never actually bring the sand timer. And it's 20 questions with a trader. And what's cool about this game is when everyone's trying to guess, then there's the person trying to mess things up, but you can't be too obvious to mess things up so you don't get caught. You got to be just very subtly trying to screw with. Yeah, which is really nice. And I've had, again, another game I've played countless times and had so much fun with. And you don't even, I mean, you could easily play this game without the actual stuff in it. But it is a small box game, and it was probably one of my first Oink games, and still the one by far, not that I played in a while for obvious reasons, because it's more of a party game, but it's still the one I go back to all the time.
Cool. Yeah. I'm a terrible liar, so I think I would suck miserably at this game, but I do want to try it at some point, because
it's so much fun.
All right, my number four is Arboretum, which is a small card game that was published by Z-Man, and then Renegade took it, and it's got a Beth Sobel art now and a deluxe version as well. This is a tree game. It's almost like a tile laying game with your cards. You're trying to play your cards in front of you in such a way that you create paths that score you points. But your hand is very small, and you need to keep cards in your hand to score the paths in front of you. And you can see what your opponent is trying to do, or your opponents, and it's just agonizing. This game is just, the decisions are just agonizing. It's so, you just want everything, and you can't have everything, and you really, you just have to make some really tough decisions, and I think that's why I love it so much. I think it's just wonderful. That's Arboretum, my number four.
It's funny. I have the, I don't know if it's collector's edition or whatever, so it's in like this wood box thing. So I don't, because it's so big, I didn't even consider it as a small box game. But
that's funny.
It totally is, but it's just, yeah.
Yeah, I have the Z-Man, the green box, which is much smaller.
So I like that game, but I'm so bad at it. Oh my gosh.
Just it's so good.
Awesome. So bad.
It's hard. It's a tough game, and tough decisions, which makes it just so good.
So my number three is totally like the opposite of that, but has lots of fun, which is great. In it, and that is The Deadlies. That's the most recent game on this list. You guys have heard me talk about it. It's one of my top games from last year. Again, just based on, much like The Insider, much like Cross Carrot. And that's one thing about like my entire list of small, and it seems that's what I want from small box games, is just fun and a good time. Because looking at my top five here, it's just like, it's all games like that. And this is just kind of a game where you're trying to empty your hand as quickly as possible. There's a lot of, it's take that. You're playing cards that are based on the seven deadly sins, and they all do wacky things to try and get rid of your cards. There's even one that just lets you get rid of everything and get the point if you can somehow pull it off. Like BGG on the publisher's thing says, a nasty little card game for a hell of a good time. And it's a game that I've laughed so much. And, you know, as I mentioned before, I was lucky enough to play, Paul Saxberg is local to us. I was lucky enough to play this game in various iterations throughout the years, and I was so happy when we got it. And it didn't disappoint. I was, you know, I mentioned before the quality, that doesn't have anything to do with the gameplay itself, is not the best, like the component quality, but in terms of a quick game that you could pull out that's super easy to teach is one of my faves.
Nice. Yeah, I bought that like just before COVID hit. So I am looking forward to getting that to the table once things start to go back to normal, hopefully. All right, my number three, we've talked about already this episode, and that is Fantasy Realms. This is a combo building game. You've got I think your final hand is six or seven cards. And they all build off each other. You're looking for synergies. You're pushing your luck, hoping to get some crazy combo that is, you know, that one card that you need that'll score you a crazy amount of points. One of the biggest complaints about this game is that the scoring takes longer than the game itself.
Yeah.
But I absolutely love that aspect of the game because I love seeing the different combos that people come up with. And, you know, you kind of get some of those moments where it's like, oh, I totally had that card, you know. And I've had so much fun with this game. It's one I keep going back to. I just picked up the expansion, haven't played it yet. Very excited to. I know Jamie Stegmaier is a huge fan of this as well. And Red Rising is built basically on the idea behind Fantasy Realms. It's just great fun. It's great fun. And yeah, so much game in you know, small deck of cards.
Apparently, Germany is all a fan of this now, too.
Yes, yes. Oh. They're nominated for the Kenner this year. Yeah. Which is cool to see.
I think, like, 8 or 9 to, like, 2 on my list were, like, so I could easily interchange them. And I think this could have easily been number 2, but was... You know, I love Fantasy Realms. It's such a great game.
It really is, yeah.
Yeah. All right. My number 2 is Llama or L-L-A-M-A, L.L.A.M.A.
No, L period, L yeah. period, A period.
Yeah, so this came out a couple of years ago, and it's a Reiner Knizia game, and it's basically just like a little bit more of a gamified version of Uno. There's not a ton going on here, but again, if you're thinking, this is another game I've worn out. I'm actually on my 3rd copy of this game. Haven't played in a while for obvious reasons again, but I have played this one so much. I adore it. I love Llama, and I never get tired of it. And it's the perfect game to just, if you're just few people hanging around, or like I said, if you're like, I've played this one on the plane in the before times, bunch of times, you know, works okay at 2. It's obviously, I love this game at 4 or 5 and even 6. It's just a chaotic mess, but I've played it with my wife. We played it at 2 just on the plane, and it works. You know, it's a game I brought with me when, again, thinking about like when I would go to Montreal and I would play with my nephews who don't really play games very much, but they would love it again because you're just like, you know, you get that, and then you're putting the cards down, and someone drops a flop, you know, like a card, and you're like, oh, I can't do it anymore, and I'm screwed, and, you know, and it's got golf scoring, so it's like, game's over once you get over 40, so it does have the little chits in it as well, which, I feel like I don't really ever use, and then whoever has the lowest points wins, but it's a super fun game that I've had lots of.
Wait, you don't use the chits, but there's the whole thing around...
If you go out
or whatever, then you can return a 10 chit,
yes,
or 5 chits or something.
So again, thinking of like traveling and stuff, like you do a pencil and then you just do a check mark and an X, you know, a check mark for 1, an X for 10.
Okay. As long as you're playing by the rules.
Yeah.
All right.
I forgot. There's a system.
Okay.
But yes, I do have, I play at home, I play with the chips, but thinking, like, again, I brought this game a lot of places with me and just had it in the baggie, and yeah. So.
Cool. Yeah, that is a fun one. I've had a lot of fun with that as well. I picked up the party version, but for obvious reasons, haven't yet had a chance to try it. I don't know exactly what has changed.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just gonna say I picked up the dice version as well, and I
haven't had a chance. Of course you did. I don't think there's like 4 different versions now. There's Llama, there's Llama Party Edition, Llama Dice, and then there's Llama with just 1L that looks like a square box. And it says 3GREE W1. I have no idea.
Does
what
it
that
have means. Is it a yellow cover?
No, it's looked like the purple cover, but it's just like a square box.
No, weird.
I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, but you've only played the first one?
Yeah. Okay, I will definitely, you know, when I start playing game nights again, I'm sure I will end up getting at least a dice version, but maybe the party version.
Well, I'll let you know what I think of them. Yeah. If there are any, I don't know. I haven't heard much about the dice one. So I think the party one I've heard good things about. It's worth getting, but I don't know anything about the dice one. Anyways, my number two is Hanamakoji. This came out a few years ago. It's a two-player only game, and you have a hand of cards. This is very much like Arboretum in terms of you don't want to give your opponent your cards, but you have to. You have four tasks or task tiles in front of you, and basically with your hand, you have to do each one of those task tiles once. So once you do them, you flip them over, and it could be like give your opponent two cards and you take two cards. And ultimately, what you're trying to do is geisha cards in front of you in like I don't know four or five different suits, and the cards match those geishas, like purple, and you're trying to get the most cards in front of each of them so that you win that geisha. And I think it's like if you have three of them or something, then you win. But this game you end up having to do something with each of your cards, and quite often you end up having to give your opponent's card or your opponent cards that you don't want to give them. You're doing some deduction, trying to sort things out. And it's just, again, agonizing decisions. So brilliant. So fun. Quick. It's great. Highly recommend. Hanamakoji.
Cool. I need to play that again. I do have it. But I have not. Yeah, I can't remember why I didn't play it more. I feel like I'm guessing my wife didn't like it, which is why I wasn't thinking played more. But I can't remember why. I feel like I should try and play it again.
Definitely.
She really likes Arboretum, so. All right. Well, my number one, any guesses, Michelle, or I'm guessing not?
No.
Since we all know you don't even listen to me.
No.
She doesn't even try and play it.
Valley of the Kings.
No.
I'm trying to think of
that. I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
That's a good one.
It is.
I thought about it.
Yeah. No, my number one, which should be of no surprise to anyone other than Michelle, is The Crew.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Quest for Planet Nine. Far and away, not even close. No one in the same atmosphere or stratosphere.
Nice.
It was like I mentioned, there was like a one for me, and then there was like two to nine, which was probably all interchangeable. But okay. One, definitely The Crew, Quest for Planet Nine. So this was my game of the year last year, was just probably my game of the year before because I had played the German version, and then the U.S. came out in the U.S., so I'm just cheating, and it was both. I absolutely still adore this game. I'm so glad, it's one of the few of my favorite games that I've been able to actually play throughout the pandemic, which also makes it, because it is available, has been available for 6 or 8 months on Board Game Arena, which makes it even more special to me, the fact that it was a favorite before, and the fact that I could even still play it now, and all that being said, I really, as I mentioned on the show, I don't like the two-player version at all. I'm not a fan of the bot thing in it, so I don't like it at two. But I played this game hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times now, and just I love it. It's a cooperative trick-taking game that you just gotta wrap your head around that's a thing, and that's a thing that works, and
it does
have fun
work
with it. It's got all sorts of different missions, and super excited for the underwater version that's coming out. I'm sure that will. In 3 years, probably this will be number one, that'll be number two, and I'll accuse myself of cheating. Okay. Probably the exact same game, but whatever. But I love it. The Crew, Quest for Planet Nine is my number one.
Nice. Great pick.
Yeah.
Great pick. All right. Well, my number one, Ed, do you have any ideas on mine?
Linko?
Yeah. Look at you.
I pay attention.
No, you have a memory.
Some would argue with you, but sure.
Yeah, Linko is yeah, my favorite game by far. I have played this many times. You know, it's like hands above my other games in terms of how many times I've played it. It's just one that continuously comes to the table. I do not tire of it. I do tire of games. I do not tire of this game. I can play it over and over and over. It's by Kiesling and Kramer. And it's difficult to explain, so I'm not going to try to explain it, but I just absolutely adore this game. I think it's such a brilliant, brilliant design, and yeah, it's my go-to, and I don't think I'll ever get sick of it. I did find out, though, that there's an expansion or some promo card, so I might seek that one out. I think I might because we do get so much play out of it. But I love this game. Cool. Just love it. Yep. So that's my number one.
I like that one too. I can't find it. I don't know where it is. I have the box, but there are no cards in it. No, I have no idea where.
What? How does that happen?
I'm going to assume it got lost on a trip somewhere because it's a great small box game would be on my.
There you go.
My very short list. It's just a really good game. I think I played it the first time with you. I think it was you who taught it to me, maybe. I feel like it was. But I really like it. It's a good game. My little wife really liked it too.
So good. Do you have any quick mentions?
Not that weren't mentioned before. Like, yeah, Fantasy Realms, Linko would definitely be there. Mamma Mia, definitely. The other one is... why can't I remember the name of it now? I can't remember it. Apparently it's not. I've played it so many times. You go, what are your mentions? And then I'll try and remember it, / you'll say it.
I'm surprised I don't have any trick-taking games. Like, just you bringing up the crew is like, I really do like trick-taking games, but they're not on here for some reason. Don't know what that's about. But my mentions, I have almost made the cut, For Sale, Biblios, although that's got dice, but... mostly cards. Sushi Go and X-Nymped is one that I quite enjoy.
Oh, No Thanks would be on here.
Yeah, that's a good one for sure.
Why can't I remember it one? It's... Oh! Gosh darn it. Ooh.
What's it? Can you, like, tell me what it's been
it's
about?
It's like that one there, and I could get up and go see, but I'm not going to do that. No, I'm just like drawing a complete blank. It's like on the tip of my tongue. I can't even explain what it is.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yeah, I'm so awesome. I know.
Hopefully it'll come to you. Let's move on, and then maybe you'll have stop talking, I have the answer moment.
Yeah.
But until then.
All right.
Whoa. Well done.
I always get in trouble for this one.
That was our ship sound because we're doing our shipping out bit, wherein we identify which bits are being banished from our home.
Banished! You're out of here!
Get out!
Yes, I'm all right. Mine is Reavers of Midgard.
Good choice.
Reavers of Midgard. I don't have very many Kickstarter regrets. Reavers of Midgard is a huge Kickstarter regret. Mostly just because of how just horrible the campaign was run, and then everything that happened, and then this delivered like right before the pandemic, I think. So I couldn't really play it, and it just sat here looking at me and mocking me. And then I just moved it to the For Sale pile, and and it's gone. And it's just... Champions is a great game. Champions of Midgard is a great game. I would definitely play Reavers. I would like to try it, but I needed it gone for my sanity.
That's so fair.
I just needed it gone, man.
It was eyeing you, judging you.
Yep.
Yeah. I would play Reavers too. I think it's it was for me. It was a player count issue.
Because you landed up getting it, right?
I did. Yeah. It was a lot of like, if I go to the space, then you can follow. Kind of stuff, and it just felt like it needed more players, and I just knew. And then it was like a lot of set collecting. It felt kind of a lot of to do for very little.
because people were able to get it at retailers for half the price before backers even got it.
That's so I hate when that happens. Oy. All right. Well, mine is Maglev Metro.
Hey, you just talked about this last episode, right?
I did. Yeah, I just did a review of it. And, you know, it's a good game. I did enjoy my play of it. For me, there's just something about it that just didn't do it for me. I'm not sure that there's a whole lot to explore. Like, it's one of those games that I feel is maybe a little bit deceptive. It's like, oh, look at all these interesting ways that you can build up your engine. But then when you actually do it, it's like you kind of need to do the same thing. And maybe I'm just playing it poorly, but I don't know. There's something about it. It was just like, eh. And I felt the build up was really slow. Like, especially at the beginning, you can do very little. So it's like you have those turns where you're like, I'm going to place a tile. Okay, next, you know, that sort of thing. That being said, if I don't sell it, like, I'm trying to get a decent price for it, you know, I'm okay. Like, I you know, I'll play it again, and if someone asked to play it, I would be happy to. But it's not, when I see it on the shelf, I don't get excited. There's nothing pulling me there, so that's why.
Yep. Michelle, stop talking.
Okay.
Stick
Helm. Got it. You got it.
Stick Helm.
Yes, that's a good one.
I think I confused myself because I was like, yeah, I couldn't remember what the German game was. And this game was, it was a game you had to kind of seek out forever. And then Capstone re-released it.
That's right.
Stick'em. But yeah. Stick'em, yeah, that was the game. That was
great game. Mean game. Whew, yeah, but good game.
So much fun.
It's so good. Yeah, that's a great game for sure. Nice.
Yes. Now back to Maglev Metro. But
well, no, we're done.
Okay.
Yeah. But before we close out the show, we do want to say thanks again to you, our amazing listeners, and our show sponsor, Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find an amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. And don't forget to use the coupon code ATB-TAKE5OFF100 to take $5 off your order over $100. One use per customer, no other rules apply. The next time you're playing with someone who has AP, may we suggest you use that time to click the subscribe button and leave us a review on Apple Podcast. Thanks again. Bye.
Bye. What? And pre-order our merch at meeplescrossing.com.
Right. Buy all the merch.
And then sleep in your shirts when you get them. And
oh, they're so comfy.
That's right.
I don't know what that fabric is, but every store needs to make more clothes in that fabric because mama likey.
You can buy two of the shirts and have one on your chest, like one on your upper part, and then, or buy two and then wrap one around each leg. It'll be awesome.
I don't think that would work very well.
It'll work fine. Don't worry. Please do.
You do that.
All right.
You let us know how it goes.
Perfect. All right.
Mm-hmm.
All righty.